Hi, I'm Sahel Janissari, a migrant rights researcher and activist. I am very happy to be presenting the Qualitative Open Mic podcast. And this series is on interpreting qualitative health research data. In this episode, Alder and I tackle the very tricky and counterintuitive subject of how we can interpret art in our qualitative health research. Alder, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. My name is Alda Caracciano, and I am an academic researcher, visual artist, curator, and activist. I'm currently based at UCL as honorary senior research fellow, and I'm a consultant for the Sloan Lab for participatory practices at the Sloan Lab, which is project funded by the HRC. But I also have an affiliation with the University of Sussex, where I carried out research for Cool Power.
So let's start with talking about artistic data. And could you just very basic level help me understand a bit what artistic data is in the context of qualitative research, qualitative health research?
Okay, so I mean, performance and visual arts in particular, they've been used as research methods in a number of disciplinary fields, especially in the arts and humanities, and more recently in social sciences. And I guess they've been really at the core of what we know as practice as research, right? So, which obviously has been trending in academic circles for quite a while now. And I guess, this is also the reflection of a trend towards more egalitarian, participatory, embodied, indigenous, feminist, and phenomenological paradigms of knowledge production, which are, exploring different ways of reaching a deep level engagement with participants in research. So, I mean, the arts, obviously, they have a value which is intrinsic to themselves. And I'm an artist as well. So I also enjoy not necessarily escapist art, but certainly art that takes me to places that are not necessarily immediately mundane and telling me about practical facts. But there is also a substantial body of work and creative artistic work which helps elucidate and go deep into issues that might have to do with political, social, economic situations. And they are a fantastic way of getting to know better these subjects and issues, etc. So socially engaged artistic practice has been something practiced, especially in the UK, for a long time. And more recently, I guess what has happened, especially in the social sciences, is that, you know, researchers who are, as I said, interested in participatory methods or practice as research have realized that the creative methods can offer an incredibly valuable way of engaging participants and really co-designing their research outcomes together with them. So the whole conceptual framework of research has changed because of the use of creative methods.
Great, thank you. And does that mean that the findings also change? What we come up with presumably is going to be quite different.
I would probably say that is more nuanced, that sometimes offers you areas of knowledge that you wouldn't really get otherwise, complementary, deep. So it's not just a question of saying it's different because it's using a different method. What I mean is, let's use an example. Let's say that I decide in a project, in a research project, to use graphic arts and drawings. And I decide that in order to explore together with my participant a specific issue, right, then we are going to draw ideas, or we are going to draw situations, or we use some stories and connect those stories to us and then draw these stories. Now, we could say that, yes, the drawing is different from, for example, the sound recording of an interview. However, what is said through that drawing is probably ultimately not so different from what the person would have said, but is actually deeper. Perhaps it gives me aspects of that story that would have not come out if the person was just going to be interviewed. Nuances that would have been left out by simply retelling the story. There are some things that the person, the participant himself or herself, didn't really realize until the moment of drawing. So that drawing becomes a moment of discovery for the participant themselves. That's where the difference is, if you like to use the word difference.
That's very helpful. Thank you. I was wondering then, when you were talking, so I have an idea of how you might use different methods to produce what we might call artistic data, and mm-hmm. how that could provide rich and nuanced information about someone's experiences or perspective. Uh-huh. How do you go about understanding someone's experience and perspectives if you perhaps haven't done the process of co-production? If you have, for instance, a transcript of an interview, you can understand that and use that to come up with some themes or results. Can you do the same for images or even theatrical productions?
Okay, here there are two different things that you're proposing. One is using creative methods for elicitation, right? So, for example, I can use photography for elicitation, and therefore I can have conversations with my participants around photographic records of past experiences, and I can record those moments of interactions. I can use a video recorder, I can use a sound recorder, and I can then transcribe, obviously, those encounters. And so in that case, what I'm doing, I'm using a visual record in the form of a photography, but that could be also something else. It could be the process of drawing, for example, together. And so what I'm trying to say here is that the visual then is an element in the discussion, the conversation, the dialogue. You know, what my research output has there is an enrichment because I have a visualization of something which is of value not only for the person who has been engaged in the process of remembering, but is also for the readers. So I have an added value. And that added value is the possibility of eliciting memories from my participants, but also making what the participants are saying more understandable and more clearly, if you like, usable, more clearly understandable to those who will read. And so this is the process of, if you like, using images or drawings in the process of eliciting information. Something different when we have a co-production with participants, let's say, of a theater play. So let's say that I decide to use a creative research method with a group of young people to explore issues around drug use. I want to use it as part of my research on homelessness. And then we together start working on scripting and improvising. And in this scripting and improvising scenes with participants, we come to understand aspects of their direct experiences on these topics, right? And these aspects are aspects that probably would have not emerged in a normal interview process. But because we are performing and because we are assuming that we are impersonating someone else and who's not us, and because you as a researcher decide to position yourself amongst your participants as an equal, then you have a script which becomes very rich. Now, the script is not an academic output. It's an artistic product. What that artistic product does, if you then present it to audiences, is the opportunity then to elicit from your audiences information. And that information can be elicited during feedback sessions. And those feedback sessions then can be recorded and they can become part of those famous interviews, right, that we were talking about. So the two then go hand in hand. They run parallel to each other and they don't necessarily need to occupy the same space. They can still be two different outputs, if you like, but at the same time, they have been co-constructed with the same objectives in mind. But you find different ways of reaching that, and you find different ways, creative ways of gaining as much information as possible at a deep level with also an element of discovery for the participants.
So does it then feed in to your analysis?
Yes. And then that feeds into your analysis because, of course, then what happens is that you can talk about the process. You can talk about what happened in the process of creating that play for whatever you decide then eventually to have, right? And you can discuss the positionalities of the different participants and yourself. And then in relation to that, you can also, for example, find out what the participants, moments of discovery of those participants and ways in which they perhaps did not align to a process that was pre-planned because a creative process allows for those divergences, which are always very interesting. You can then talk about the way in which that refers to any kind of bibliographical resources or literature that you have done, surveys and research that you've done. You can also then look at ways in which, as I said, then people respond to that play that becomes part of your data. So you basically start having much more data than what you would have originally had you simply gone out interviewing people around homelessness.
Great, thanks for that. I kind of wanted to also maybe just, this is a stupid question, but do you have a purely aesthetic analysis?
I think we always do. I mean, this is something that is intrinsic to the form, right? And we call it form precisely because it has an aesthetic quality. So it is inevitable that something that is well crafted will have a much stronger impact on us. And when I say us, I intend everybody who's involved in the research process, right? So the participants, the researcher, the audience. And of course, these aesthetic qualities are the result of a number of factors, collaboration with creatives who are professionals. So having a proper budget when you do decide to have projects that involve, creative methods. So there are certain elements that ensure that the quality of the artistic product, if that is the purpose, are in place. But when we talk about practice as research, we do not necessarily need to think about a research process that involves the production of an artistic product. We can also just have art as part of the process and not necessarily then leading to a creative outcome.
And that creative outcome, so I take the points about how aesthetics are important in any sense. So even if you were doing an interview, the sort of form of the interview and is going to be part of your analysis. So basically the same is true for any artistic outputs that someone analyzes. You are inherently taking that into account. Is there any way of explicitly sort of, if I had a photo of someone took a photo of their experience of a mental health intervention, for instance, and I looked at that photo. Is there any way I can take the photo apart to, like I would take a interview transcript apart and analyze it on different levels? Is there some sort of visual literacy that I might need to be able to do that?
I mean, of course, that helps if people decide to use the artistic methods and creative methods, then it's their responsibility, I believe, to get some kind of, you know, skills in understanding ways in which that art form works. So what kind of building blocks you need to have in order to have a proper, you know, a theater play, or what kind of analysis an image requires. So that is inevitably important. However, we look at aesthetics and we immediately think about appearance. But aesthetics is not just appearance. Aesthetics is also the way in which content and form merge, especially when we do practice as research, and therefore, let's say our main objective is, again, to find out, you know, the impact of, for example, restriction on abortion rights, yeah, in women in certain countries. And I decide to use poetry to explore, you know, as a creative method to explore this issue. Now, is poetry, the aesthetics of poetry, something that needs to be based on Shakespearean rhyme? Or is it something that is more, you know, concerned with making sure that the content find the best possible expression within that context and is true to the participant's voice? The aesthetics is the true confluence between content and form in that given context.
Thank you. I feel like I'm learning so much. So then, if then doesn't the aesthetics, then this confluence between content and form, tell you quite a lot? So if content and form, I guess it's you could apply this beyond artistic methods as well. But if content and form, if there's a mismatch, I think that might tell you quite a lot about how someone's feeling or their ability or confidence of their self-expression. Or I think it could be basically used to help you perhaps interpret what someone has said or someone is trying to say. Would you agree or disagree, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
I think we have to go back to the purpose. What is the purpose? If the purpose is to produce an artistic product, then, you know, I will make sure that people are mentored. So I will make sure that the participants are mentored in advance of entering the research phase, so that they acquire skills that, you know, give them confidence in using a specific medium, you know, and then we start producing something together. But if the aim is not to produce an art piece, if the aim is to produce research and to use research methods to unlock stories, then the question is not so much about having excellent artistic standards. The question is how close the outcome is to the story that was hiding within the participant. And you will know that by simply asking and talking to the participant about their experience of relating to their story through the use of that specific medium. So if then you have a participant saying to you, well, by drawing the story, I actually saw myself doing this and that, and I would have never, ever realized that. Or if someone tells you, you know what, actually, it didn't work for me to try to, you know, impersonate this character because that forced me, you know, towards a story that is really far away from my story. And then you say, oh, really? And why is that? And then, you know, and then again, that disjunction between the character that a person was trying to, enact and the real story that is hiding behind comes out. And again, it's because of the contrast. So what I'm trying to say here is we shouldn't really, as researchers, when we use creative methods with participants, we shouldn't be focusing on the artistic, on the aesthetics of the artistic outcome as if we were going to then do, a big exhibition at the Victoria and Albert Museum or somewhere else. I think the main point is to access information in a way which is as close to the truth as possible for the participants, and that allows them a space for reflection which they wouldn't have otherwise. Because that space for reflection is a space for discovery, and the creative methods allow for that space. So I guess that's where the intentionality of your engagement needs to be out there at the very beginning of, of the research process.
Great, thank you. I kind of want to touch on what you said about asking people if they feel like the artistic output has properly reflected their experience or what they intended to express. Hmm. Are there any other ways that we might ensure that, this artistic output is true to someone's emotions or expressions or experience? And maybe this is a point where I know before we started this conversation, you kind of picked up on critique this term interpretation and said perhaps co-curation is more important. So, my question is, how do you ensure the true intention of the participant is expressed in this artistic output? And does that have something to do with this co-creation that you spoke of?
The question really is, and the basis, who's designing the research? I guess a more radical practice is the one where the ethics of participation means that there is some kind of wiggle room for the participants to perhaps change things along the way and to redefine the research questions. You might have some kind of general area of research, but then in the process of mapping the research, area with your participants, then you refine those research questions with them. And then when it comes to methods, you might then find out they might have needs that you did not consider. I'll give you an example. A few years back, I did research with Moroccan communities in West London to explore the impact of gentrification on this community living in and around Goulburn Road. Now, Goulburn Road sits in one of the most gentrified, if not the most gentrified, borough in Europe, which is Kensington and Chelsea. And people have been kind of progressively pushed out of the area because obviously the property market has gone through the roof. And I was very interested in the way in which the cultural heritage of the community is manifested in tacit cultural practices and intangible heritage. Anyway, I had previously worked with a community group in the area. And so when I did the planning for this project and the way in which the memory sessions that I was going to do with the participants would work out, I thought there would be intergenerational, sessions with men, women, people of different age groups. And this was in my proposal. And then I sat down with the community liaison officer, and she looked at me and she was like, "Alda, are you crazy?" I was like, "What do you mean I'm crazy? This is not a good project. This is a fantastic project, but you will never have anyone of young age telling someone who's, from a different generation, older generation, what they think. And I was like, oh, really? Yeah, that's not the way you want to do it. You want to have space where the young people talk amongst themselves and the older people talk amongst themselves. And also, you shouldn't really mix men and women because they might not feel comfortable doing that. And so the method then changed and we co-designed the memory sessions together in a different way. And I still reached the objective of bringing this intergenerational and, you know, intergender kind of way of sharing knowledge and information through the final product, which was an immersive installation, immersive multisensory installation of Goulburn Road called Zelig Door on Goulburn Road, which actually toured internationally. It was seen at Tate Modern. And I had pictures of people of different age groups and, you know, men and women all around the artwork, listening to each other's stories, but not in the process of creating those stories, in the process of actually becoming, being themselves, you know, part of the audience, if you like. So the objective of the research or the method in the research was achieved, but was achieved in a different way, which was not the one I had originally planned, because you want to have a porous, responsive method that allow participants to mold the way in which you conduct research, right? So they're not there just to be interviewed.
I guess my question is, do participants, in your experience in artistic methods, have a chance to mold the interpretation analysis stage of things? And how does that play out? So in this project, for instance, did that happen? Did you do it together, the analysis, or was it something that you presented to people afterwards?
Yes. So with this project, what happens, for example, when you have research, you conduct research, you have interviews, then you tend to extract those bits of information that you think are the most important, the most relevant, right? As a researcher, and you link those, et cetera, et cetera. With this project, what I did, I had the sessions where people were discussing and, you know, we had the memory sessions when they were telling loads of stories, etc., and were listening to each other as well. And I recorded all that. So that would be part also, if you like, of some kind of background information, etc. But when it came to deciding what would be shared as outcome of research, I asked them to make that choice. It wouldn't be me. And they would have 1 minute to record to camera, the experience that they wanted to share out of the many they had remembered, discussed with me, etc., etc. So the editing, if you like, was done by them. And then when it came to deciding the way in which the project would be framed, in relation to the socio-political situation in Kensington, we discussed that together so that I would have a clear understanding of how they would have liked to position it within a kind of more general framework of gentrification and so forth. Of course, I mean, I cannot ask participants to read all the amounts of books and articles, etc., but I can make sure that we have an informed conversation of the most relevant debates in, you know, in academia. And then we can decide together how that is framed within an article that would be produced, as well as, of course, having the opportunity for the participants to go back to the transcripts and then approve those transcripts before publication, and obviously being named in the research, and so on. Or remaining anonymous if that is their choice. So these are all ways in which that interpretation you're talking about then is not so much interpretation, but as I said, is co-curation.
Thank you so much for that explanation. Just to finish off, I'd like to quickly ask you, are there any practical tips or resources or places that websites or things or people to look at who have done good qualitative health research with artistic methods, and in particular thinking about the co-curation, as you put it, element of things?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, there are so many different organizations working, you know, using creative methods. I have used the Sussex with students, Positive Negatives, which is an arts organization that discusses, that works with participants to create comics and graphic narratives on, you know, really important topics like migration, slavery, you know, loads of different social issues. And they have a fantastic website, positivenegatives.org.uk. So that can be also a source of inspiration for people who are interested in participatory theater. Certainly, Collective Encounters is an organization based in Liverpool, and they've been doing fantastic work in co-create, you know, in working with researchers as well and co-creating theater with participants on topics which might, you know, be stigmatized in society. So, you know, Collective Encounters can offer quite an inspiring understanding of the method. I would also say that there are organizations based at Sussex University that also have done work with the theater, and so Higher Vision, which is run by Professor Raminder Kaur, has done quite a lot of work in this area of, you know, participatory theater, if you like. My own website might offer some interesting resources as well, is aldaterra.com. It really depends also what kind of methods you're looking for. Photo Voice is also a very interesting website with loads of information on ways in which photography can be used. Yeah, I don't know. I can continue.
No, thank you for that. That was a pretty broad question, and you gave a very broad answer. And so there's lots of things for our listeners to look up. And I would also, having done Photo Voices training, I would really recommend them in particular.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all from us. Thank you so much, Alda, for your time, for your answers. And thank you, listeners, for your engagement. Thank you and goodbye.